Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
And a good Tuesday afternoon. As a member of the board, may I put a motion on the floor, if you don't mind?
Yes.
Everyone should take the day off because it's 50 degrees out?
No.
I second that.
I believe it's 55.
But I would like to say aye to your motion, Scott.
Well, you don't even know what it is yet,
I do.
I would like to propose for consideration, it's 51, by the way, and yes, it's a good day for a day off, that it has been 3 weeks. I propose that we do Terrible Joke Tuesday today at 3:45.
Aye.
Dan, you're on the board now.
Oh, why? Thank you.
That's where you say aye.
Or nay.
Well, I'm considering, you know.
Okay, he's off the board.
Off the board. That
you've just been removed from the board of directors.
Short-lived.
Boy, that
I
was quick.
I think you should go for it. Terrible Joke Tuesday.
Okay.
I thought today was Wednesday, but it's Tuesday. So
director tenures like marriages around this place.
Discombobulated.
Wow.
Oh. Wait, what was that?
He said tenure on the board of directors is like the tenure of a marriage around here.
They come and they go.
Wow.
It wasn't my fault.
And
stay down.
Yep.
I didn't ask for it.
So how's everybody's day going?
It was going really well.
Sorry.
Wow.
We have a lot.
That was a good one.
A lot to talk about today. As promised, I reached out to our good friend Gerald Wilson, who sang the national anthem during the AFC Championship and has done so before, to see if he would come on the program this afternoon in the 3 o'clock hour. He said yes.
Will he sing to us over the phone?
Oh, you know he will. And he didn't just sing at the opener of the Chiefs game. He got on a plane from a college basketball game where he sang the national anthem. Jet set it to Kansas City just in time for us to have the gift of his talents here. And then I think he's on an airplane again. The man is in high demand, but he has made time for us.
We'll get to the Chiefs in a moment, but you mentioned college basketball. Did you hear about this story out of the University of South Carolina? You have not? Okay.
I think so.
Sam, have you read this story?
I have not.
The University of South Carolina Athletic Department announcing over the weekend that the women's basketball team's arena DJ has been suspended for one game.
Oh, God.
For the choice of music played at the end of the Gamecocks win over LSU on Friday night.
Okay, Gamecocks beat LSU. Got it.
In South Carolina.
Got it.
The DJ who plays the music during the women's basketball games, his name is DJ Tio. He played the song Cut Friends by a rapper named Camouflage.
Not familiar.
I had to go back and listen to it. He has about a million hits on his biggest hit, which is Blank Friends, and then he has Cut Friends, which has like 300,000 hits. It was recorded 25 years ago.
Okay.
Camouflage's real name is Jason Johnson. He is the father of LSU player Flaje Johnson.
Oh.
He was murdered in 2003.
Oh.
3 months before she was born.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
And are we saying this was a one in a million accidental choice?
So DJ T.O. says, yeah. I play this song all the time. I'm from the South.
Mm-hmm.
Camouflage was from Savannah, Georgia. I play this song all the time. He must be the only one because it only has 300,000 plays.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm pretty well versed in the rap genre, specifically 90s rap. Big fan of 90s rap. I've never even heard of Camouflage nor this song.
No. Flajay Johnson said on Instagram, I'll take my L on the chin, but this is just nasty behavior. Nothing funny about
it. Oh, God, that is terrible.
He played a song by her murdered father that she never got to meet.
Okay.
Suspended for one game? It one should game. Be more than that.
I was going to say, I don't know that I would have him back.
That is one a game. Slap on the wrist.
That's terrible.
Mm-hmm. The suite ticket prices are out for the Super Bowl.
Lay it on me. Lay it on me.
If you want a suite at the Super Bowl...
Which money is no object if you're getting a suite, but clearly, what is it?
Which would seat anywhere, depending on the size of the suite, between 20 and 45 people.
Mm-hmm.
The cheapest suite is $500,000.
Okay.
$500,000.
But you could charge, you know, all of your friends $50,000 to come.
Math is hard, isn't it?
It is. It would be a lot.
The most expensive suite at Super Bowl 59 is $3 million.
Which is what Taylor Swift, I believe, paid last year.
We know who's going to be occupying that suite.
So let me do the math. I'm going to have to get the calculator out.
$500,000 for 20 people?
It would be a lot.
No, I'm going to do 45 people for $3
million. Oh, okay.
So let's see what that is.
It's my understanding there would be no math.
That is $66,666 per person.
Well, how many rich friends do you have?
Not 45.
Well, they're not going to pay to send you. They're going to go.
They're not going to pay to send you. They're going to go.
Spoken like a former board of directors.
Wow.
In the stack today, we have an update on a scam that is very serious that we're going to talk about again today because I will be screaming about this until I take my last breath. With respect to people posting stuff on Facebook Marketplace and then getting robbed. It has happened again. We will talk about it later in the program. Speaking of scams, you know that I lost all of my contacts in my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So legitimately, when someone reaches out and says, hey, and it just happened just now, it said, hi, Dana, I just saw your post about this summer. We went, it's amazing, let's get drinks sometime soon. So when that first came in, I did not know who that was because I've lost all my contacts. And anyone who's switched phones, you know this. You've got to do that awkward dance where you're like, oh, great, right, who is this? So I am on my way into work today, and I get this text from a 913 phone number, and it says, hey there, how are you? Haven't seen you at pickleball forever. And pickleball is abbreviated to PB.
Yeah.
It's the jargon of the pickleballers.
PB. Haven't seen you in PB forever. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, gosh, I got to do this again. This is going to be one of my friends. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who it is. Let me read you the reply. Lost all of my contacts 3 weeks ago. I am so sorry. Shoot me over your contact info. Got a new phone. It's been a nightmare. Reply. No worries. Are you still play pickleball? The scammers have taken over pickleball lingo to get you to engage.
Well, do you still play pickleball?
Well, they said, do you? No, no worries. Are you still play pickleball? And it took me about 10 seconds. I thought about it. I was like, okay, am I being scammed or is this someone like on voice text? And if this is a friend of mine that I've lost their contact information, I don't want to be a jerk. Yeah. But, you know, you just know. I just had a gut feeling this is someone in Nigeria trying to take all of my money. They write.
Scammer ain't got time for grammar.
No worries. Are you still nice. Play pickleball? I replied, do you still use subjects and verbs?
Have you roasted?
They reply back with a crying laughing emoji, and I have not heard from them since.
So they didn't send you their contact info?
Here's how you know this was a red flag out of the gate. Haven't seen you in pickleball in a while. Okay, that's totally legitimate. I'm so sorry I lost my contacts.
Right.
Shoot me your contact info.
And they didn't.
And they didn't. They replied with another question. Are you have still play pickleball? Whatever it was.
So you should say, I, Dana, who dis?
No, I don't want them to have my first name.
Don't give them the name.
Samuel?
They already know.
No, they don't.
I'm telling you.
How do they know that she plays pickleball? They just,
it's just
shot
random.
In the dark?
No, it's random.
Warn your elderly neighbors. Warn your children. Warn your husbands and wives. They have seeped in to pickleball lingo.
I sincerely hope that this is somebody that you know. Actually, I can look.
Then why wouldn't they give their contact information?
Correct.
Sam, Maybe they didn't pay attention to that portion of the text
message. No.
It was the portion of the text.
No, no. This is a scammer who knows I've got his number.
I'm going to type it in, see who it is.
Makes me so mad. So mad.
So here's the reason why they're using pickleball lingo or PB, although I'm no aficionado of the pickleball sport. And it is a sport. But I don't know anybody who's ever called it PB.
Yeah.
Right? 20% of Americans over the age of 18 have played pickleball. 20% of Americans over the age of 18. So it is a safe bet that you can hook one out of every five people that you text randomly.
Yep.
It's a real person.
It is not.
It is a real person.
Stop it.
Do we know the name?
I would have to pay $5.99 to know the name.
You don't know that that's a real person.
It would tell me if it wasn't.
Why do all scammers have to be from Nigeria? It could be a local scammer.
It would say it's a VoIP, V-O-I-P, which is a internet-generated phone number. It says specifically it is a real phone number.
Now, they may have taken over that phone number.
I was going to say, Sam, because the only option I have here is to reply back and be like, are you a scammer?
I've gotten scam calls from my own phone number before.
A for yes, B for no. Because I don't want that to be a real person thinking I'm mean.
Well, Dana, most of your friends, I would argue, are probably pretty well educated. Is that a fair bet?
Some of them, sure.
Okay. Why did you just diss your own friends?
Well, because, you know, I don't think the voice text would do, no worries, are you still play pickleball? I just don't think a voice text would do that.
Correct. And even if it did, they would write back, every time that I've ever voice texted you and the words do not come out the way that I intend, I asterisk and put the right word in.
Well, or the phone corrects it for you.
Yeah.
Oh, God, is this really a phone number?
It is a real phone number. I can guarantee you that.
Why don't you write back, why did you not send me your contact info?
Who is this?
Yeah.
Need to search it on Facebook, see if it hits any.
I did, and Dan, it has not. And so now I'm engaging with a scammer to prove to you this is a scammer.
Or a friend who has bad English.
Well, as long as you don't send them $150,000, engage all you want to.
Yeah.
Just send them your checking account.
Have fun with them.
It's one of the questions I've always had. Like, they want to talk about pickleball. Okay, let's say that this is someone over in, you know, South Africa or something. And I say, no, I haven't played in a while. How are you? Like, what is it that they hope, you know, at some point we're going to talk pickleball, then I'm going to realize they don't know me, and then I'm going to send them money?
It's the old foot in the door tactic. Mm-hmm. If they can get their foot in the door, they can strike up that relationship.
And slowly start to knock you down.
Remember.
And then you're out buying gift cards to send
them. Right.
The lady in the UK was dating Brad Pitt via text message for like 18 months, and she got taken for $850,000.
She was trying to help Brad in his time of need.
913-586-7798. 913-586-7798. We'll do terrible jokes at 345 here on Dana and Parks. Story here from the USA Today. Netflix's new fictional series, American Primeval, is coming under fire for its depiction of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and its leader, Brigham Young. The Mormon Church responding to the series in a release, calling it dangerously misleading and the portrayal of Brigham Young mischaracterized. Quoting here from the statement, the church wrote, a recently released streaming series presents a fictionalized interpretation of events in mid-19th century Utah. While historical fiction can be illuminating, This drama is dangerously misleading. Brigham Young, a revered prophet and courageous pioneer, is by any historical standard mischaracterized as a villainous, violent fanatic. Other individuals and groups are also depicted in ways that reinforce stereotypes that are both inaccurate and harmful.
But, if you would allow me.
Please.
Yeah, but. Evidence as to whether or not Young ordered the attack on the migrant group is conflicted. Historians still debate the autonomy and precise role of local church officials in ordering the massacre and Young's then concealing of evidence in its aftermath. Young's use of inflammatory and violent language in response to a federal expedition to the territory added to the tense atmosphere at the time. He was the president of the LDS Church at the time, as well as governor during the time of the attack.
Right.
I'm not saying he did or did not take part or did or did not order it, but to suggest that all of that is somehow not true would be false.
Well, and I said after I watched it, and you were recommending it, saying it was a run, do not walk, and you were right.
Hundreds of pioneers were slaughtered. Someone ordered that. I'm not saying it was him, but he was the head of the church when that happened.
Now, I'm not an expert on the history of the Mormon religion, or Utah for that matter, but I do know that any time a church is exposed for any potential wrongdoing, their response is not going to be, yeah, we did it. It's always going to be, no, this has been misrepresented. We were not some sort of ravenous group. We were defending our own or something. I'm not sure. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right.
In, what was that, 1100 or 1200 AD? By the way, and we watched this series the other night called Challenger, The Final Flight on Netflix.
Yeah.
It is absolutely brilliant.
Remember I told you the other day, if you would only watch those documentaries that I tell you to watch when they come out 5 years ago, you would lead a richer, more educated life.
I like to do it on my own time.
File this under that category.
So today marks 39 years.
Yeah. God bless them.
Since the explosion of the Challenger.
And liftoff of the 25th space shuttle mission, and it has cleared the tower.
All the communications between the shuttle and mission control indicated everything was going fine. There was a sense of relief that the much-delayed flight was finally underway.
Engines at 65%, three engines running normally, three good fuel cells, three good APUs. Engines throttling up, three engines now at 104%.
Challenger, go at throttle up.
Challenger, go at throttle up.
It happened just over 1 minute into flight.
1:15, velocity 2,900 feet per second, altitude 9 nautical miles, downrange distance 7 nautical miles.
Well, I can't even watch this part. When they pan back to the family, Scott, stop. I can't even
From
watch
mission
it.
Mission control, silence.
Wait, listen to this.
Then the bland, chilling report.
We have a report from the flight dynamics officer that the vehicle has exploded. Flight director confirms that. We are looking at checking with the recovery forces to see what can be done at this point.
Mm. The question you will all inevitably have when you watch this documentary is, how did no one go to prison for the loss of those lives?
Yes.
Because there were so many people within that program that knew this was going to happen. It was a matter of when, not if.
Correct.
Some of the senior people tried to step in and say, we should not be sending this shuttle up, let alone with civilians on it. And then exactly what they all predicted would happen because of the technology at the time and the O-rings and all of those things happened.
I'm looking for the name of the company that administered or was in control of the O-rings. Where is it in this story?
There were so many people complicit in that,
Scott. There was an outside company, and as soon as I see it, I'll recognize it. And they were basically the company that was behind the O-rings. And you hear about the O-rings in the Challenger explosion. They were not comfortable with this going up with the temperatures outside. Keep in mind, that was a big thing in the series was the temperature was below freezing, and that caused even more problems with the O-rings when it got colder.
But there was a push.
To get more and more shuttles up.
Well, to get that one up because of the high-profile nature with Krista McAuliffe, the first teacher on board. Some say that NASA and Morton Thiokol Management should have been prosecuted for that disaster. The Rogers Commission report faulted both organizations for poor engineering and management.
So the Thiokol group, they met around a conference table. They took a vote several days before Challenger was supposed to go up. The overwhelming vote was no. It's not ready. We need more time. It's going to be below freezing. They sent that recommendation to NASA. NASA was like, are you sure?
I mean, all these school children are going to be watching live.
Are you sure? And so Thiokol took another vote, and they recommended launch.
Thiokol paid... Let me do the decimal, $7.7 million in cash and annuities, dividing the cost 40-60 to settle all of the claims. Four families got $7.7 million.
Why only four families? There were seven that were on the ship.
Were those the four that were not directly a government employee? I'm asking, I don't know.
No, there were only two. I believe there were two civilians on the flight. Obviously, Krista McAuliffe, and I think there was one other who was not a NASA-trained astronaut per se, and the other five were clearly astronauts.
It's important, I think, from a historical standpoint to watch that documentary, but it will just leave you with rage. It was one of those that I was so mad after I watched it, because as Americans, we all came together. You know, Ronald Reagan's beautifully delivered speech.
Mm-hmm. Written by Peggy Noonan.
Oh my gosh. And you know, somehow the nation had all of these sad feelings and shock, but good feelings. When you look behind the scenes of what was going on and who knew what and when they knew it, there should have been no good feelings, no fuzzy good feelings about the Challenger explosion.
This is one of a handful of times in my life, and I know we got to get to break. Where were you when?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember getting into my dad's car. He was going to take me to this place on base where I could play drums. I was just starting to learn how to play drums. And I get in. I'm like, hey, Dad, how you doing? Well, it was morning here for you guys. It was afternoon for us. And my dad just, first time in his life, he goes, shh, the space shuttle exploded. And we listened to it on Armed Forces Network. 913-586. Where were you? Probably in school.
In school. You don't remember the TV rolled in on the cart?
No, it was afternoon for us.
Oh.
It was late in the afternoon. 913-586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott Parks on KMBZ.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So So no amount of money is going to bring back a loved one, but the postscript on the Challenger legal drama that unfolded after this is something to just note here. The $7.7 million split by four families was decried as, quote, woefully inadequate. Mm-hmm. The four families went into those negotiations without legal representation. The reason only four of the families were able to sue was sort of because of, like, the qualified immunity. Okay, the way I read this, no active military or federal civilian employees who die on duty can sue the government.
Correct.
So only Krista McAuliffe and was it George Jarvis?
Greg Jarvis.
Greg Jarvis's relatives had the right to sue the government. The two civilians who died had the right to sue the government. The astronauts' families could only sue this Morton. Is it Thiokol? I apologize if I mispronounced that.
Thiokol.
Thiokol?
Thiokol.
Okay.
Regardless, none of them should ever have been sent up that day. And when you see their smiling faces and they're waving for the last time.
Well, they delayed that flight.
Yes.
Based on the series.
And now you know there were people behind the scenes knowing that we are sending them on this thing.
On a dangerous mission.
They
didn't know that it was a death mission, but they probably should have. There were questions about the temperature and how the O-rings reacted when the temperature got below freezing. Now, I understand this qualified immunity of the government when people who are in the service of the government die. Because what would we do in times of war? You know, a commander comes up with a bad war plan.
Right.
And sends these soldiers into what would ultimately be their...
gross negligence.
I agree. I don't disagree with that. And when Thiokol comes back with an initial recommendation of, no, let's not go up, and NASA, which was under pressure, I believe, to get 25 missions up in the year 1986, I mean, it was just incredible how many shuttles were going up at this time. It became so boring, they stopped putting it on TV. The only reason Krista McAuliffe was included was to get the public interested in the shuttle program
and,
again.
And it led to their deaths because the pressure was mounting to get that thing up in the air.
So NASA goes back to Thiokol and says, come on, guys, are we sure? We sure we can't go up? It'll be warm enough. And Thiokol comes back with a different recommendation. Brian in Mound City. Brian, hello.
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
It's going well. Hi. Thank you.
I was in fourth grade computer class on that day.
TV was brought into class, of course.
No, TV was not brought in.
Really?
We heard about it over the loudspeaker.
I'll be darned. Because the whole point was to get Krista McAuliffe, a teacher, into space, have TVs wheeled into every classroom, make young people care about NASA and the shuttle program, and for that matter, adults. Because it was with such frequency that these shuttles were going up, to repeat myself from just a moment ago, the American public became complacent and bored.
Help me with this. What is 1639 military time?
That's 4:39.
UTC time, Florida time. What time would it have been here?
It would have been 3:39.
It would have been 3:39 here. God, I am almost positive. I'll look it up.
You would have been out of school by that point.
It was a morning flight. That. Then, I was out of school. It was in the middle of the afternoon
in
Germany.
It had to have been the coverage the next day because I very clearly remember the TV being rolled in on the cart. And over the loudspeaker, our principal said, we are going to have a moment of silence. It was the first time we had ever done that in a classroom.
I'm looking at what time did it explode.
It says 16:39:13.
That can't be right.
UTC. Well,
UTC is not Florida. That's universal time.
So it was 11:39 Eastern time, so 10:39 in the morning here.
I knew it. I know we watched that thing live. I know we did. Because I kind of remember our teacher going, okay, like, turned it off, and everyone was just like, what just happened?
I don't know what UTC stands for. I remember it was after school in Heidelberg, and my dad was picking me up to go play drums.
UTC is the Coordinated Universal Time.
Which I believe runs through England, if I'm not mistaken.
If you remember sitting in school, tell me, because I'm, you know, memories fade, but I'm telling you, I remember watching that on TV.
Yes, UTC runs straight from the North Pole through England, France, Spain, Western Africa, and then down to Antarctica. Sherilyn in Blue Springs. Sherilyn, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, so Dana, you were in school because I just started my first year of CMSU down in Warrensburg, and back then you could be 18 and drink. Sorry.
Yeah.
And so I stayed at home that day because I had a hangover, and I watched it on TV.
And Sherilyn, Scott's right. It was 11:39. Eastern Standard Time, which would have put us right smack dab in the middle of class when that happened.
10:39.
And because there was a teacher on board, everyone gathered to watch this.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Damien in Norburn. Damien, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I was close to Norfolk, Virginia at Flight Deck Aircraft Firefighting School. And it was in the morning because we had broke for lunch and we were watching it on TV. And so it was late morning on the East Coast. But I watched it from there, and I was almost 19 years old.
Damien, thank you. Channel 9 Chief Meteorologist Brian Busby joining us on the hotline. Hello, Brian.
Hey.
Hey guys, how are you?
We're well, thank you.
Good. You guys were talking about the shuttle. A couple of things. One thing I need you to double check on. But the first thing is, I had just gotten at Channel 9. It happened in the afternoon, as you mentioned. But I'd only been at the station for a few months. I got here in November of 85. But they decided to go and get a model of the shuttle and ask me, okay, go on the set and explain the O-rings and temperature.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. I've only been here 7 months, but all right. But the other thing that you were talking about, Scott, because they want to try to get kids excited about the space program in the shuttle, please check this. But I remember reading somewhere that Big Bird, Carol Spiney, who was the Muppeteer for Big Bird, was supposed to be on that flight more so than a teacher.
You are absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Character. Okay. That's what I thought. I read it somewhere.
I believe the costume was too big, and they were concerned about the costume on board.
Correct.
It says, Brian, NASA. Oh, no. It says NASA approached the Children's Television Workshop in the interest of, quote, getting children of America more interested in the space program. Carol Spiney was meant to go into space on board. Sequences were to be filmed with Big Bird, like entering the shuttle. But to Scott's point, the task of sending the puppet suit proved too complicated, and the educator slot was filled instead by Krista McAuliffe.
Right. Because the costume, I mean, Big Bird's head is on a stick, and actually, honestly, it's more in the chest where Carol would be. And that thing, if you ever seen even Sesame Street Live when it comes to town, that costume's pretty wide. So it'd take up probably 2.5, 3 normal people's seats to just get the costume in there.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, Brian, can you imagine Big Bird goes, I mean, my God. That is a PR disaster from which I don't know NASA would have survived
as
that. As if it wasn't already.
Yeah.
Exactly. Certainly, any loss of life is bad. But to say that icon with kids, if that was what you're trying to get accomplished, would have been tragic.
Mm. Hey, Brian, always good to hear your voice, my friend.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
Right.
Be well.
All right, you too. One thing I did not know until watching Challenger, The Final Flight, which Dana recommended to me 5 years ago, and we finally got around to it last weekend, was that Krista McAuliffe had a backup. Barbara Morgan was the number two selected teacher to go up. She had to go through the same training, the same education that Krista McAuliffe had to do. And if, for whatever reason, as the launch approached, if Krista McAuliffe could not go up, Barbara Morgan was ready to take her place.
They trained right alongside them.
And I highly recommend this series. I believe it's four parts, called Challenger, The Final Flight on Netflix. Barbara Morgan is prominently featured in this documentary. And strangely, never once do they ask her, do you consider yourself lucky?
Or do you have survivor's guilt?
Right. 913-586-7798, 586-7798. Here on Dana and Parks. All right. It was 39 years ago today that the Challenger exploded. I believe it was 73 seconds after takeoff. And if you haven't seen it, Dana found it 5 years ago. It took me a little bit longer. On Netflix, there is a four-part series called Challenger, The Final Flight. It is worth your time, maybe on a day like today. Bob in Lee's Summit. Bob, hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going well. Thank you.
So I remember vividly watching that video. It was watching it live on the TV in the library my senior year in high school. And I was just, we just were floored. Everybody just stopped talking and just couldn't believe what we were watching. And a little side note to that, my following year, go to college, and one of the instructors was telling me that there's actually a video in that cockpit of what happened, but no one will ever see it. Hearsay, I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm wondering if that's ever true.
We'll take another caller, Bob, and I'll look that up while Greg is talking from Columbia. Hello, Greg.
You know, I think anybody who experienced it, like, I equate it to the day John F. Kennedy was assassinated. People knew exactly where they were the second it happened. I mean, I was in my college dorm television room getting ready to go to class, and I thought, hey, I'm going to watch this thing take off. And 78 seconds after it took off, I watched it disintegrate into midair, and I'm like, what just happened? But I think, you know, anybody that's old enough to remember the assassination of John F. Kennedy, you know, I think people, I mean, I know exactly where I was. I'll remember that for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. And there's only a handful of places. By the way, to I believe it was Bob, there is no video from the cockpit of the Challenger.
And thank God.
But there is a transcript of the crew's voice communications just prior to the explosion.
They did pull the flight recorder, and it says that they do have that audio somewhere.
Okay.
It's one of those documentaries, Scott. I don't know whether to tell people to watch it or not. From a historical standpoint, it's important that we don't forget what happened.
Why wouldn't you?
We can't change what happened. I just felt rage after watching that because they knew it wasn't safe. They rolled the dice, and they lost. And an entire generation of us watched that unfold live on TV, not knowing at the time they never should have been sent into that shuttle, ever.
Clearly. What are the other where were you wins? Obviously 9/11.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Mm-hmm. I will never forget. I was in my very small apartment on KU's campus.
Princess Diana's death.
Princess Diana's death. And
I'm old enough. I'm a little bit older than you. I distinctly remember Ronald Reagan's assassination.
Very much so. Because that was the time my father shushed me. I got in his van after he picked me up from the babysitter. He didn't even come to the door. I just went out. I opened the van and I said, did you hear? And he just went, shh.
Mm-hmm. I was homesick from school that day. And we were in the den because my mother would never allow a TV in the living room. And she was ironing. And we were watching the news. Well, we were watching a soap opera, I think. And they break in with that. And she unplugs the iron and we go sit on the couch and she says, we're going to pray for the president.
Yeah.
And we did.
Talk about the things we didn't know at the time. No one save a handful of people in America knew how close Ronald Reagan was to death.
That
car, on the way to the hospital.
That's right.
The operating room.
The White Bronco chase, of the Hyatt collapse here in Kansas City.
See, I wasn't living in Kansas City in 81, so I don't recall that. But certainly the chase, the verdict.
I was in KU's journalism school, Dole Center.
I was in the newsroom at KLWN in Lawrence.
We just said, how? Like, what?
Well,
Boston Marathon bombing.
Yeah, we were here.
We were here.
Yeah.
Dana and I were in the back office. And I remember walking into the studio that day. It was right before 2 o'clock.
And it broke on Twitter.
And Dana says, Twitter is going crazy about something at the Boston Marathon. And I said, well, just monitor it, see what happens. And right before we went on the air, she said, there's been a bombing at the marathon. And we did what we could with what little information we had. And then I remember we sent it to ABC News for their coverage. Because I mean, they had it. We didn't. We didn't know what we were talking about. Which is kind of par for the course. I'm trying to think if there's any more. No. Definitely OKC. Oh, Columbia.
Sure.
When Columbia exploded on reentry. I was on my way up to a KU-Nebraska basketball game.
And then will our children, because of technology, we might ask this later, bring this back at 5, have that same where were you when moment in the way that we all did before cell phones, especially for the Challenger disaster. Mm-hmm.
Because we're so connected with everything globally all the time
everything
now.
Everything you know all the time that this is happening. Like, you know, they got Osama bin Laden, and we learned that on Twitter.
In the middle of the night. 913-586-7798. We have terrible jokes coming your way at 345. Dan Weinbaum has the news in 2 minutes here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.